Welcome to Day Zero Update for March 1st, 2026. I'm your host, Chris Hologi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Jan Red Victoria.
And yeah, we've got a big week of news. Much like last week, we have a bunch of bad news here for the industry. But we have some good stuff as well.
Oh, yeah.
Some games that are going to be coming out later this year. We got some interesting stuff from the Pokemon Presents Showcase. And yeah, we've been playing some demos as well, so that has been fun to check out. So before we get to the news, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here. I've been playing more Blossom: The Seed of Life, as I have been progressing more into that. It is a very good survival crafting game. Where you are trying to revive this dead planet as you're a little robot that is sort of running around the planet, gathering the resources you need to build new machines and all that kind of stuff to bring the planet back to life. And I'm now on the part of where I've got water, and now I need to build some stuff around the variety of like lakes that are around this on the map here. And I think what they call it is I'm building algae all over the planet's surface that will get me to the next part. So I'm essentially working on finishing up like the third of four parts of this game. So that's been where I'm at. I'm basically building out an ability for me to be able to craft and build things more easily, because initially where I've been at, I've had to kind of literally like drag stuff out of where my base is and into new areas, and that's kind of a tedious way to do it. But now where I'm at, I have gotten blueprints that let me build that stuff for my rover, for the wagons. I have a crafting and a the printer on my wagons that are hanging behind my rover now, along with a couple extra batteries and all that kind of stuff to allow me to take longer trips. I've gone around and found a bunch of extra blueprints for a lot of like the cosmetic stuff, to build, you know, habitats and that kind of stuff that so far is not useful, but I'm sure it will be, because the next chunk will be, I assume, bringing plant life back into this. So we'll see from there, but so far I've been enjoying it a lot. I've got 10 hours or so into this, so I'm forward to pumping some more time into this before it's out on the 9th. So we'll have a review next week, hopefully. There's that. The other game I've been playing some of is Pokemon Leaf Red, since that came out. So I grew up playing Blue, and so whenever they've offered a chance of playing the original game, I've generally gone with Blue again, and I decided this time I'll go with Red, since I've never started that up in any way. Which, you know, 99% of the game is the same.
You mean Blue, Fire Red, right?
No. Fire Red? Okay. I forgot what the name of these are. I've never...
No worries.
I never touched the Game Boy Advance versions of these games. It was always the original Game Boy carts. The Fire Red is... It was Red. Leaf Green is the... What was Blue. So I decided to go with Red. And it seems like you just get like 20 different Pokemon that are only available in that version versus Blue, which is always annoying, because it's like I'm not going to get those other 20, but it's not really that big of a deal. Right now I'm basically trying to go through the forest outside the first area that is where you're going to run into a lot of Weedles that just get you poisoned for make it really fucking annoying. And I believe the other annoying thing is there's no experience share on this, which I think there is on Ruby and Sapphire. so that you don't necessarily have to have keep switching out your Pokemon to get them all getting experience, especially when they're underleveled. But otherwise, it's largely all of that same game.
Yeah. Fire Red and Leaf Green do have experience share, but it's actually gotten later in the game. So, yeah, not good for quality of life, but as for the original way it was played, that was the way it was done back then.
Yeah, that's not great, especially when I'm running a lot of level 2s and 3s. I had a chance to get into Pikachu, but it was level 3, and I was like, I don't want to sit here and grind that much out again and again for that, so I just let it go, and I've not seen another one since, so. But I assume when I do, it'll be a higher level, so that'll be fine. But yeah, I still just love that initial town that looks so stupid in hindsight, because it's two houses and Professor Oak's lab. And your rival's house doesn't have a second story, despite your house having one, and the houses both looking identical. A lot of that kind of stuff, and like, there's more people around here. It's like, where the fuck do you live? You live in the woods, the Pokemon? There's people wandering around that they're only there because they are tutorials. Also, the other annoying thing is because of the super long L and R buttons, they use those as a sort of help system. You can pull it up and be like, what am I supposed to do? And it gives you like tips for things to look out for, though it's not going to give you anything real specific, because, you know, a lot of times it's just like, I just look around and talk to people. Maybe some specific areas that'll have specific advice, but it's a lot of just like basic tutorial stuff. But yeah, when I'm holding the Switch 2 playing this, I'm constantly hitting those. Much like I do in other Switch 2 games when I'm playing in handheld mode, so that's just getting me to want to switch to a different controller or something for that game. Because that is annoying. They have options for kind of changing it, but it's changing it to other things, and I feel like if I change it, then the D-pad stops working as a control method. I don't know if that's a bug or if that's an intentional thing, but that's also pretty annoying. But otherwise, enjoying it, what it is, and sort of in classic GBA fashion, a lot of Nintendo's games don't have multiple languages on the same cartridge. It's separate ones for each language. So people are mad about that, because the English, the Spanish, and the French editions that are on there are all separate purchases. So people that are multilingual or would have need for multilingual versions have to pay, you know, two or three times for the same game. And like, yeah, I get it, but also Nintendo's not going to do that much work on this. To put all the languages on one cart, on one, you know, one file. But that would have been nice, especially when you're trying to celebrate the whatever, the 30th anniversary of the franchise, as they kept highlighting when they announced all of this stuff. We want to do something special, and it's like, how about put all the languages in one version? But yeah, that's Pokemon. Then I played a bunch of demo stuff. I played the Marathon Server Slam, still going for another day. Did a stream of this, played some, and I'm enjoying it. It's definitely tough up front, because it's not super great with all the UI stuff going on there. So it can take a bit of time to figure out what you're looking at, what you're looking for, where to go for certain things, and how, you know, everything works. But once you start getting the hang of that, it gets to be pretty easy to get around. So it's an extraction shooter, which is very story heavy, because, you know, you get to the early stuff you're doing is a lot of missions for, you know, there's, I think, six corporations that you're kind of doing missions for. They will give you missions to try to do. A lot of them so far that I've seen have been like, you know, go to this building and find a station and download, you know, this data kind of stuff, or activate this machine and do a lot of that kind of stuff. And you're exploring these areas, and there is AI enemies around. These kind of robots, enemies that you either try to avoid or you try to take them out. If you're playing solo, you probably want to avoid as best you can, because getting into fights with enemies can alert more around you to come after you. But sometimes you find that there's only like one or two around, and you can take them out and kind of solve the problem you have. But there are also other players. They initially give you the first map you have. They give you an easy version of it that I think initially had less players on it. But then I saw them posting on Blue Sky, I think, being like, oh, people have been complaining about this, so we've added more, had more players to spawn in. And I'm like, why the fuck would you do that? Like, at least have this easy map that's, you're going to run into less players, so you can hopefully progress a little more quickly. But yeah, as an extraction shooter, the whole thing is you bring, you know, equipment down with you, and if you die, you lose all the stuff you had. Outside of like specific like data things, you can find like data cards that you kind of upload on the fly. That stuff you can keep, whatever you get out of that. That's usually not that much. But yeah, during the match, like it's after 5 minutes, exfil stations show up on the map that are sort of where you, you know, activate it and then hopefully survive until it's ready to kind of pull you up out of that. Sometimes there are versions of them with guards around them, which are, you know, more annoying to try to take and get out of there with. Most of my my runs have ended in me dying and not, you know, getting out, which means I lose the items I had, which would be a little frustrating, but so far I've not been taking that much down for missions I'm not confident in. But they do give you free, like, I forget what they call them, but they're things that kind of give you some basic supplies to go in. And they, as a sort of a baseline amount of, you know, ammo and health and shield rechargers, as well as a gun for that. So you can kind of get some basic stuff to go in without risking too much. But they also have merchants for each of the corporations that can give you a bunch of things to buy. You know, they have a bunch of attachments for guns and a bunch of attachments for your suit, some that will allow you to carry more stuff, some that boost, you know, shields and a variety of other things. So they give you a lot of ways to customize your character bits, and even the character classes are pretty different. I think you have six of them. I think five are in the server slam. They got, you know, they start you on like a very basic like soldier one. There's recon. There's a few others. I was looking at one of the guides that Bungie has posted. Like, here's things to keep in mind for trying this game out. And they do recommend one of the classes specifically if you're going to play solo. But yeah, this game also has, you know, the chat so that you can hear people around you and be able to, you know, try to, you know, bargain with people if they're, you run into another crew or other people and be like, hey, I'm not going to shoot anything, you know, don't mess with me. I'm just trying to do, you know, mission or whatever. Maybe team up that way, whatever, but I've not really heard anybody talking yet. But yeah, that's been pretty cool. I might check out get the full game when that comes out later this week. We'll see, but so far that's been pretty fun. Let's see, I'll check out the Truckful demo. This is the new game from Mythic Owl, who's made a bunch of cool stuff. This is a game that's, I think is set after some sort of apocalypse has gone on. That's seemingly destroyed most of the vehicles, at least in the area you're in. But you kind of have this working truck, so you decide to start delivering stuff for people. And you are putting that in the back of your truck in a very kind of Tetris-y kind of way, though everything is mostly square shaped for the most part. But there is some strategy to it in the way that it works. Like the first one I got was like two pieces of furniture and two boxes. And I figured out pretty quickly that you'd want the boxes in the back and the furniture in the front, because the boxes can kind of act as a guard for the rest of that there. Stuff can fall out and can get damaged, but usually if it falls out, you can stop and back up and put it back in and kind of redo the placement mini game kind of thing there. But yeah, I did a few missions. I was pretty satisfied with how the game works. The truck controls, you're not, in third person mode on it. It's kind of more like an isometric kind of view to it, or maybe like a side view of it. So you're kind of doing a lot of turning around to stay on the road, avoid bumps and all that kind of stuff. You get to a forest that has the road is real bad shape in there, and you're trying to stay on the road, and there's some obstacles, and you find out that there's like this this weed that has sort of taken over the forest and has like almost like tentacles and such blocking parts of it, so you kind of have to drive around a little more erratically and all that. And yeah, it's got upgrades as you're kind of doing more of that and getting some money that you can spend. And yeah, it's got some nice story stuff going on. I just really like what that's doing, so that's one I'm excited for. That's out later this year. This is a Pocket Pair published game. I played Densha Attack. This is essentially an extreme sports game, but instead of like a skateboard or a bike or something, it is involving a train. And it has heavy kind of like jet set radio kind of vibes to the style that this game has. Controls wise, it has a lot of kind of Tony Hawk vibes, but you're controlling it specifically like skate, using the right stick, and different kind of ways you're moving the stick around to do different tricks. And it is, since it's a train, you're on rails a lot. And kind of in a classic like platformer kind of way, like a Ratchet and Clank, you often have multiple tracks to switch between. And so the game has a lot of like signs blocking your path, so you have to move around, as well as like ramps that can launch you into the air so you can do some tricks before you come down. And there's moves for, slamming the train down, because they oftentimes have obstacles in the air that you want to avoid. I played a few of the stages that it has, and then it gives you like this what they call like a skate park kind of equivalent to go check out. And that has some more advanced stuff going on, like actual like skate rail grind kind of stuff going on there. With a similar kind of meter that, like Tony Hawk has for balancing. Also the notion of running into like tunnels that you can move the train around more freely to do tricks that way, as well as a variety of ways of getting around the skate park. The specific stages have Tony Hawk style goals to achieve for like finding collectibles and doing specific things around it. One of them has Moai heads on it. It's like, oh, do a trick to tricks to get across the Moai heads, kind of stuff. And yeah, it's got a lot of fun stuff there. There's time goals and I think a score goal as well, with different tiers on that. So you're trying to get through quickly on runs and all that. And it's got a lot of just wacky stuff going on. There's at one point where you land on a Ferris wheel and are just essentially controlling that and trying to destroy a bunch of satellites along the way until you get to the other side of the water where the track is resumed. Got a bunch of stuff like that. So yeah, that seems like that's a really cool game. I'm looking forward to that one. That's out later this year. So that's one to check out. Yeah, that is the Undercoders, who've made a bunch of different games. I'm trying to see what they made recently. There's like Mail Mole, Super Epic, Conga Master, some of this stuff. Koa and the Five Pirates of Mara, Retro Mystery Club. So yeah, I got some decent stuff there, but this one looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
Then I played Wild Blue Skies, the new game from Chuhai Labs, which is the developers of Cursed to Golf. And yeah, this one looks really rad. It's Star Fox-like. I think even more so than at least the Star Fox games I've played, it kind of keeps track of the health of all of your team members. So you're trying to get them all to the end of the stage without anybody dying. This demo only has one stage to it, and then a boss fight that is maybe challenging at the first time you try it, but it's pretty easy once you kind of know the gimmick there.
Mm-hmm.
The boss is kind of, let's say, like an octopus, a robot octopus kind of thing, where you're getting the tentacles popping up with a bright red part to shoot at it to damage those, and eventually you destroy those. The head pops up, has like a scuba diving helmet on, so you shoot it in the face. You do damage to that, and then like the last round just has all four tentacles in the head back up, and if you just destroy all the tentacles, then it has no attacks anymore, and so it's pretty easy boss to beat, so there's no real variety there. Or way for it to get challenging once you've figured out that if you take out the tentacles, it doesn't do anything else. But the stage itself is pretty neat. It has like Tony Hawk style like letters to collect, as well as some other stuff. Demo's a bit annoying because it has like a 3 or 4 minute cutscene to watch before you get to do anything, and it doesn't have the ability to skip it. So if you want to replay, I don't know if it has it in the stage. If you like beat the boss and then like pause it real quick, if it has a way of replaying the stage from there. But if you don't think about that and get back to the main menu, you have to then sit for a few minutes before you can go back and try it again. So that's kind of the downside of the demo. But otherwise, it's pretty good for what it's doing. I do hope it's going to have some good variety here. But yeah, like that boss particularly is like okay for what it is. Fun to fight, but once you know the trick, it's really easy and lacks any way of like countering what you're doing to it. But yeah, that's seems pretty good. Looks good, runs good, and all that. Has some weird options to it, whereas like the ability to like have it continuously fire is an option. And also, I think it's like the second stage of the game. It's showing you, so they don't pop up the controls at any point. So it took me a bit to realize like how I do things in this. And I don't think I really paused it for a minute or two, so I missed a good chunk of the stage doing stuff to, you know, try to figure out what was going on with that. It's not super intuitive initially. In that first stage teaches you all the controls you need, so kind of just skipping ahead, it's a little rough to kind of jump back in. So I recommend definitely pausing it as it starts and checking the controls from there. It doesn't really show those otherwise. But that's out later this year, and that seems another cool game. And then the other demo I played is Vampire Crawlers, which is a spin-off of Vampire Survivors, but taking a lot of those sensibilities and building a deck-building game. Like deck-building and dungeon-crawling kind of game to it, like a first-person dungeon crawler, because you are going around these areas. It seemed to be the same stages as Vampire Survivors, so you got that big field initially. You're kind of going through, and you go through, I think, 3 or 4 floors, to which you beat a boss on the floor, and then you go down. You literally dig down, you find a shovel, and dig down to the next floor until you get to the final boss, and then you beat that. And you're done with that, you go back to your base, Or you can do the same kind of thing of like either buying new heroes to play as or upgrading stats or, you know, doing some other stuff like that. They had like, you know, the same kind of like unlock screen to show you how to unlock other stuff. A lot of which in this demo is like use this card, you know, X amount of times or, you know, kill X amount of these enemies, that kind of stuff, to it. Then get a few characters in there, same characters from Vampire Survivors. I get like the whip guy, I think there's a knight guy in there, and there's a woman who has like a mage thing going on. So they also neat tricks to them. I think the characters themselves are a card in your deck initially, but as you get more cards, you know, they go up rarely after that. It works like a Hearthstone where you have a certain amount of mana to use for your cards, and you get, you know, I think three cards for each fight, each round of each fight to play. So you usually have 0 or 1 point cards for that. As you level up, you get a new card to add to your deck. Sometimes you get gems that can be put into the slots on these cards to, you know, have it give you more armor or up your attack or any of that kind of stuff that it can do. You do also run into cards that are basically like the empty heart vial thing. It's like, oh, you use this and you get 3 max HP added to your thing, and then it destroys itself. So that you get some of those kind of cards. And yeah, it wasn't too hard from the demo I played here. I was able to get through the first two dungeons pretty easily for that. The nice thing is you can line up your cards and hit play all, though it does not play them in left to right order. It's right to left order, which messed me up because it's like no card game ever does that as far as I'm remembering. So like initially having that happen, it felt like it was just picking at random until I simply paid attention. I was like, this is doing it right to left. That's just, but you can like hold down the button to move the cards around. But yeah, you end each stage with the Reaper showing up and killing you. That's how you end the dungeon. So yeah, it's got all the Vampire Survivors nonsense to it, and that's pretty fun. So yeah, that looks like it's going to be really fun, and that's out, I think, later this year it's supposed to be. So that's another one I'm excited for. And play the Zero Parades demo. This is the new game from the studio that made Disco Elysium. But as we know, a number of the people that worked on that game have splintered off and formed their own studios. I think at least three other studios formed by people from the team that made that game. So whoever is left and whatever new people they've brought in are working on this new game called Zero Parades or Dead Spies, I think is the full title. The demo has the beginning of the game, and as you if you play Disco Elysium, you kind of start with a weird like existential conversation that you seem to be having. And I don't remember this from the original game. This has a lot more stat stuff going on. When you initially start, you're picking the spy that you want. There's like three caricatures for that. You know, one that's more stealth focused, one that's more I think more, I don't know, I forget what the archetypes they use, but they're like stats and abilities are kind of centered around that stuff. And so it seems like when you find things around the environment to highlight, I think those what you get from those fits into the way that your character is set up. And when you initially start the game, you get to pick where you want to spend your skill points. You get 3 skill points, one in each of these categories. And then from there, the way you're picking dialogue choices can fills up these meters for like fatigue, anxiety, and delirium. And if you fill those any of those up, you have to remove a skill point from that category of abilities you've used before, you've, you know, picked, which is like an interesting mechanic to have in this kind of game, where you can actually like lose abilities or you get worse at a stat that you've built up. And so it's that kind of interesting kind of game. So my character, when I was playing the demo, and I recorded a video for this that'll go up probably tonight, I fill up the anxiety bar really fast. I had to like remove a skill point from that thing, from that set of abilities. I was like, that was a pretty interesting. And you get XP from, I'm not sure exactly what it is. I think it's talking to people and looking at stuff and like figuring out something. It gives you like 10 XP every once in a while for doing enough of a thing. It doesn't really explain exactly what you're getting the experience from. But initially, the story is that you are a former spy who has had to go to the freezer, which is where they bring the spies that have been, I don't know if compromised is the right way to describe it. They've been, you know, broken essentially and have to be retrained or whatever. They come back from the, they go to the freezer, and then when they're ready to come back, you're sort of a spy that's coming back into the field with your partner. That's at least from the way I was playing this demo, the my partner was sort of in a like a not a dead state. He seemed to be conscious but not able to do anything. Seemed to be in like a very weird state, to which you can you get a bunch of options for like talking to him. Just like you know, get a weird little like nothing response from him. And at a certain point, I was able to just pick him up and be like, "I, you need to stand up, buddy." And he let go, and he just flops to the floor, kind of face first, dealing with all that. And you have to, from there, like look around. You're trying to figure out like what your mission is, the details you're supposed to find around. And I eventually found. Found enough to get an idea of what was going on, but then I had to go down to the first floor of this building to find your contact with the spy agency and like try to break it to them that your partner's like non-communicative and all that, and try and figure out what you're doing from there. And you get a bunch of leads and all this kind of stuff. So you get in the pause menu, they have like these like cards that are keeping track of various story threads that you're kind of trying to follow, as well as a map that fills out as you're talking to them about locations nearby. They can be like, "Oh, this is over here, you know, near this thing," and you're like, "Okay, so I know where these things are at," and all that kind of stuff. And there's inventory that also adds to that and all that. So yeah, it's kind of a another one of those, but going a bit of a different way, and that's got some pretty interesting stuff going on, so that also looks neat. But yeah, basically, like the point where I was going to be leaving this building was like 45 minutes into this session. I was recording. I was like, "All right, this is enough of this for now." But yeah, it's got some good stuff going on there. So that one might be one I check out. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, that is coming from Zaum, who we don't really know who's still there at this point, but they sure are making a game like Disco Elysium, with some different twists to it that looks pretty neat. I do like on their Steam page, they're very much like from the creators of Disco Elysium. Like, I don't know that that's technically true. Maybe from the studio. That isn't. A lot of the people that made that game are not there. There's that. But yeah, that's been all the demos I've been playing. Some good stuff. So I'm probably gonna still play some. Some more demos. I have a handful more to play and record some videos for, but yeah, that's what I've got to talk about right now. So how about what you've been doing, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I am just about finished with Donkey Kong Bonanza. I've done all of the Bonanza rehearsals that you have to do post game. And that was though all of those are very challenging. I'm like, first and foremost, you have to get a bunch of banana gems before you can actually do any of them. The last one is requires like 600 total before you can finally do it. And each one of the like banana the bonanza rehearsal things, they're basically challenge courses, and none of them are timed, thank goodness. But they all require they you basically go into a semi-permanent state where you're playing one of the various, you know, bonanza forms, you know, the hopped up gorilla form, the snake form, and the ostrich form, and all the other ones. And you're having to basically go through what are essentially obstacle courses. And you have to, it's like every single one of the elders before you go into them, they basically recommend, yeah, you're probably going to want to go ahead and make sure like all of your abilities are as powered up as you can before you go in, because otherwise you're going to find this really hard. And they're right, because every single one of them is very difficult. And some of them are even more difficult than others, because the ostrich one in particular, unlike all the others, all the others are like very straightforward. You just go in, you know, you do a challenge, then you get to where the banana gym is. There might be an area off to the side where you can get an optional banana gym, but it's not required to finish the course, you know, that kind of thing. But the ostrich one is like all spread out. It's like kind of open world almost. And the ostrich stuff in the game is arguably some of the most difficult, because it requires gliding and temporary flying and stuff like that. And it's very easy to not hit where you need to go and fall to your doom. Which is part of the reason why the game has like this thing where they'll let you buy up a bunch of like balloons that will like levitate you off of harm and put you back where you started at. But I finished all of those, finished all of them, which meant I only had one more to go, which is the it's at the very core of the planet. Because remember, this game, technically the entire thing takes place underground, and one of the organisms in this game that you constantly encounter are these eel-like creatures that both like eat away at the like various, you know, crust around you, but they also can like eat through like space and time, and they sort of like act as like your sort of teleportation or fast travel mechanic in the game. But there's one very giant eel at the very that's near the end of the game that you end up encountering, and he shows up one more time, and he says, "All right, we got one more bonanza rehearsal tree. You need to jump down my windpipe, and I'll take you there." And it's like, all right, whatever. He basically tells you, "Oh yeah, just so you know, that weird little monkey guy you guys were following, yeah, he kind of messed up my insides while he was in there, so might want to watch out for that." And then the game immediately throws you into one of the most challenging parts in the entire game, which involves you having to go into your ostrich form and then glide through these very hazardous spike-covered surfaces and like vines and stuff that keep snaking up. And then when you're like descending downward into like the various holes that you need to, you end up coming across all of these like vines that end up blocking up, making an almost impenetrable space that you essentially have to like bomb with like ostrich eggs to make it explode. And I'll just say it right off the bat, you are almost certainly 9 times out of 10 going to take damage down while going down there. So, you know, buyer beware. But that's not where the game where it ends. It's a fairly long course. And I've managed to get almost to the end of it, where all the elders are hanging out. But the problem is, it involves the zebra form, which involves you like having to, you know, go through all of the, you know, you have to like dash over these like permeable spaces that, like, if you try to do it with any other form, you'll literally just sink down. But you can do it with the zebra, but you have to keep moving because it's collapsing behind you. And you've also got these flaming barrels that are coming down on top of you as well. And yeah, it's not easy to do. On top of that, still playing Splatoon 3, still getting better at it, still absolutely suck at Clam Blitz. Otherwise, nothing new there. And I have also, for a while now, been playing this other little game, a nice little indie game called Mio Memories in Orbit. And this game is hard as balls. And I am, honestly, it's very difficult. Basically, you're playing this little robot that wakes up in this abandoned, what looks like a colony ship that's just sort of floating through space. You have no idea where the humans are. You don't see any humans. There's a bunch of other robots, but most of them are either, non-functional or they're trying to kill you. There's occasional helpful ones that'll show up, but most of them are very dangerous. And the game itself is like, it plays like a Metroidvania, but the guts of it are very much like a Souls-like. You know how the typical Souls-like thing goes. If you die, you have to either get back to the area you died in or get to the enemy you died to get, all your progress back. If you die before that happens, that progress is gone for good. You have like various areas where you can upgrade and you can like save your progress, but when you do it, it'll revive all the enemies around you. You kind of know how this goes. One big issue is that there is like an overworld map in the game, but the only time you can access it is by going to those various like fireside points. And the thing is, like, the way that this game's like levels are designed are extremely intricate, and it's sometimes really difficult to find out, like, can I go to this area and get in it or not? Because there's a lot of like things where it's like you got to go in through the like air ducts or like through like collapsed ceiling tiles or areas where like the ceiling is like hanging by a few wires or whatever. And sometimes it can be difficult to try and find out which is which and what you can actually access. And like this game is like super hard right off the bat. It gives you like a very basic, like, okay, yeah, this is how the game works. We'll give you a short little tutorial and then it's sink or swim from here. And I've been doing an awful lot of sinking, let me just put it that way. But yeah, that's basically what I've been doing. So Dan Reb, what about you?
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of this and that here and there. I'll start off with the actual games that I've been playing. I did finish God of War: Sons of Sparta last week. The reviews up on Smashpad, I gave it 3.5 out of 5. I do like it better than most other publications, and the main reason is because I just really like the story it tells. The game takes place when Kratos is pretty much a kid, and this was when he was, trying to be a Spartan soldier, and he has to go through those trials in order to get there. So it tells a story about him and his brother Deimos, and it starts off with, I don't want to say current day Kratos, but definitely adult Kratos, and he's talking to his daughter Calliope after she gets scolded by her mother for doing whatnot. And yeah, he tells this story about, about the will to do things as well as duty, and that's where the story begins. So basically, as I mentioned, Kratos and Deimos are, going through their trials to become Spartans, and all of a sudden one of their brothers in arms disappears. So it turns out to be, just this journey throughout Sparta. And if you're not familiar, this game shadow dropped during the last state of play in the middle of February. And yeah, it's a Metroidvania. It is a fully 2D sprite-based Metroidvania. So don't expect the kind of dynamic controls you saw in Prince of Persia: The Lost Crown. It's definitely a little bit more mundane than that, and that's where it lost a lot of people. Like, for example, when you think of God of War, when you think of Kratos, you just think of just, unabashedly quick and fast combat gameplay. This doesn't have that. Kratos primarily has a spear, and all you really do is a stab motion. There's a skill tree where you can unlock more skills to use, but honestly, they're really just counter moves. At the end of the day, most of what you're going to do is, again, that stab technique, which, you can go ahead and use to your advantage in different ways. Like, for example, you'll eventually get to a point where there are so many enemies on the screen that you really can't clear them all without, going through some damage. And oftentimes, what I found myself doing was, going under a platform in which an enemy was on, and I would jump and go ahead and stab up, and the spear would go through the the art for the platforms and whatever it may be. So I did a lot of cheesy things like that. The bosses are pretty cool. Again, like the actual combat gameplay is pretty limited, but I thought the bosses were pretty nice for what they were trying to do. A lot of their patterns were pretty sequential, so once you figure things out, there are definitely ways to, get rid of bosses without losing health and whatnot. Like as far as it being a Metroidvania, it was a lot deeper and more expansive than I intended it for it to be. When I first talked about playing this, I said I played it for about 4 hours, and after I rolled credits, it was about 18 hours through. So the game is definitely bigger than what I thought it would be. If you look at my review, the fourth screenshot is actually like as full of a map as I can get. And honestly, like this is a pretty deep game as far as just the amount of sheer size and places to explore there are here. So there's definitely that. But yeah, I had a good time. I'm not gonna platinum it because one of them requires you to like beat a boss without like not getting hit, and yeah, I'm just not that great at it. But again, I really like the story that it tried to tell. The way it did the ending was really, really nice. Obviously, I can't spoil it, but it does in a way make you feel. And if you're somebody that's interested in the more intricate story of God of War, especially as it goes back to its Greek roots versus what it does in Norse mythology now, there's definitely like something to enjoy there. I wouldn't recommend it at, I think it's $30. I would probably wait till it gets to like 15. If Sony wants to do that sometime this year, more power to you. But yeah, it's a solid title. Nothing amazing, but I don't feel like I wasted my time here. Although I do think it was longer than it than I wanted it to. I've also been playing a lot of Super Bomberman Collection. This is another Shadow Drop. I put up the review on Smashpad earlier this week and gave it a 4.5 out of 5. I am a huge Bomberman fan. I got into it ever since the days of the Sega Channel, for those of you old enough to remember that, which was actually a really, really bad service. But for what they were trying to do, it's honestly like what Game Pass is today. You have a monthly fee, and all of a sudden you have all these games at your disposal. So Mega Bomberman was one that I really, really enjoyed. And I was a Bomberman fan from there. Unfortunately, like the next Bomberman I eventually owned was Bomberman 64, which a lot of people don't like. But I was a dumb kid and I liked that game a lot. But when I played Super Bomberman Collection, this game comes with five Super Bomberman games. So it comes with Super Bomberman 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, as well as the original two Bomberman games from the NES. And the cool thing about this package is Super Bomberman 3, 4, and 5 did not exist, did not come out in the West. Those are definitely new games to go ahead and try out. And I've beaten Super Bomberman 1 and 2. I started 3 recently, and yeah, they're all really, really fun. The one thing that I wouldn't recommend, especially if you're playing a single player, is marathoning them, just because every level is pretty much the same thing. You want to go ahead and bomb through a maze, kill every enemy, and look for the secret entrance out of the level, and you just lather, rinse, repeat there. Where it does get more interesting is with the bosses. Again, it's pretty mundane. Most of the time, you just want to leave a bomb in an area where they'll eventually go, and it'll take like 8 or 10 hits before they eventually reach their demise. And then the big thing with Bomberman, with every Bomberman, is the multiplayer. And yeah, those are all super enjoyable, and every game in the collection has its own multiplayer that you can enjoy, and there is also a boss rush mode. They also did a really good job with with what you expect from a collection. You can look at the different cartridges, the different boxes, and the different manuals that came with each game, whether they're Japanese, European, or United States. Like they're all pretty cool to look at. And another thing that I found pretty funny was that, within like 6 minutes of opening the game up, you can get 27% of the trophies for doing that, because they'll give you a trophy for starting each game. They'll give you a trophy for using the rewind method, using the saves and whatever it may be. So yeah, definitely enjoyable. Super Bomberman Collection is pretty much on every platform right now, and I totally recommend it just because I'm a Bomberman junkie. Moving on, I've also still been playing some Madden NFL 26. Our third year of our draft was today, and it was the first time where I sat through the whole thing. And this is a problem. We ran into a lot of glitches and bugs in regards to how the draft works. The reason being is there is no actual like portal in order to do the draft. It's actually all done through the franchise home screen, which is pretty archaic because like you can't just focus on the draft in that regard. And the other bad thing is that whenever you draft a player, you can't actually see that player until free agency or post-draft free agency begins. So, if you get to a point where you actually forgot which positions you drafted, you're not going to be able to see them. So, yeah, I don't know how EA doesn't, fix that right away. But, hopefully that's not a problem going into Madden 27. But that's definitely annoying. But yeah, I finished my second season going 8-9 and just narrowly missing the playoffs. So hopefully I can just improve a little bit more and get to the playoffs next year. I also did download Pokemon Leaf Green, but I have not started it because I know what happens once I start that game, and I'm gonna like not pay attention to anything else. And got a lot of games coming up this month, so I don't want to do that quite yet. But yeah, Pokemon Leaf Green is definitely one of my favorite games in the series. And yeah, everything Chris mentioned is pretty cool listening to, considering he hasn't played it, and I've played it all my life, so it's pretty cool seeing all that. Anyway, moving on to the Steam Next Fest demos. I have played three so far, oh, four actually. I mentioned Fallen Tier last time I was on the show, but the other three I've played are Inconbini. This one is a sort of a cozy game where you take over a Japanese convenience store for your aunt. You're a college student who's in the middle of the summer, so yeah, it's your part-time job, and it's pretty much what you expect. You're working at 7-Eleven. You're in the back. You want to make sure that everything is well stocked and stuff like that. As for this demo, it was a really, really short one. You only do one shift. At the beginning, like your aunt sends you or gives you a call, making sure that everything is in order, and all you really have to do in this shift is make sure again that you clear out the stock room and make sure the store is well stocked. And there aren't really that many aisles to look at. There are like maybe five, four, or six aisles to go through. So I was just looking at things, putting things fine. One thing that I was able to put away quite nicely were a bunch of sodas. I did that. I found a place where they needed more bowls of ramen, so I did that. The problem was there were also these cup noodles that I couldn't put away because I didn't know where to put them. I was thinking about, putting less ramen bowls out so I can put these cups there, but I also didn't know how much the cups or the bowls were, so I didn't want to make that mistake. On top of that, there was a whole bunch of beer in the stock room, but the refrigerators didn't really have any room to put those in, so I was like, all right, I'll leave these in the back for now. So once you go ahead and do all that, you go ahead and open the store. And then when I opened the store, some old man came in, and the old man was like, "Hey, don't tell your aunt that I'm here." And I was like, "Are you a bad dude? This is totally weird." So anyway, he just goes on shopping, and obviously, like you're there to just do some customer service or whatever management you have to go throughout the store. And then as he walks by the refrigerated section, he says to himself something along the lines of, "Huh. I've never seen bread in a refrigerator before. That's really weird." And I was like, "Oh, wow, I already messed up. I should have taken out that bread, put it in the bread section, and then go ahead and put the beers there." So that's what I ended up doing. I took out the bread, I put them in the bread section, and then I grabbed as many beers as I can from the back and put it in the fridge. But before I could finish, the old man all of a sudden walks over to the ramen section. And he's looking for his favorite ramen and he can't find it. Guess what his favorite ramen was? It was the cup noodles that I did not put out. So I was like, oh, great. And then to make things worse, I was fat fingering the whole time. So I think I ended up giving him like one of the bowls so he can try it out. So, all right, no harm, no foul. But next time I know, I'll go ahead and put the cups there. And then as I went to grab more beers from the back and put them out, eventually he finds himself in the pet food section. And he tells me he's looking for a certain kind of cat food with a certain vitamin, and he needs help examining each can to make sure that he has the right one. So that's one thing that you can do. You can go ahead and look at each shelf, look at the layout of the various items you have on those shelves, and go ahead and turn them around to make sure they're front facing, back facing, examine them for whatever it may be. So I went ahead and found him the right food, and I gave it to him, and there was that. And again, I tried to go back to the fridges and tried to fix my problem. But all of a sudden, it was time for the guy to pay. So I go over to the register. I ring him up, and then it opens up to obviously Japanese currency, yen. I can definitely read notes, but I cannot read coins, and there was no way for me to see which coins to use. And I owed this guy 40 yen, and I ended up giving like the equivalent of Japanese nickels to him. I gave him 40 yen in the form of five pieces. And, you know, I probably could have given him less coins than that, but I didn't know what I was doing. And the other thing was, as soon as you choose one coin, you can't go back and put it back in the register. You have to, like, actually go with that coin. So it was a good thing that I went with the lower denomination. But yeah, that was that. He ends up leaving. And yeah, I just went through that entire shift realizing that I could have done the whole thing better. And, you know, I considered playing it again because, you know, this was only about a 30-minute demo, but I was like, I really like what I played. So I'm gonna go ahead and, you know, table this for now. And when this comes out in April, I'll go ahead and give it a try. So yeah, there's that. I worked in retail before, so a lot of this stuff like goes through my mind, and you know, you always think about how you could have done things better, and that's definitely one of the more interesting demos I've played as far as letting my anxiety loose. So there's that. The other game I played was, or the demo I played was Cleaning Up. This was made by the same devs and publisher that did Just Crow Things a couple years ago, and that was a game that I really enjoyed. And this game is, as I mentioned, you're cleaning up. You start off with a vacuum cleaner and just clean up all the garbage you can in the apartment. And then all of a sudden you get access to a broom, and you use the broom to smush up big clods of dirt that you can turn into smaller clogs of dirt that you can vacuum up. And then eventually you get access to a hose that allows you to spray at dirty items and clean them and whatever it may be. So there were about four levels in this demo that required you to use the different things at your disposal. And the controls are rather finicky because, you know, most of what you, the main way to activate the items you have is with the R2 button. But also, it kind of works like a twin stick shooter where you have to actually aim with the right stick. And that was a little awkward for me, especially playing on a Steam Deck. So that wasn't my favorite thing. But yeah, like, I think I can get through the clunky controls, but that's definitely something I'll have to get used to. And I'm looking forward to seeing more variety. The main thing, though, was I thought this would be something more along the lines of an Overcooked, but it's really just a single player game, a single player puzzle reflex game that I, you know, hopefully will enjoy when it comes out later. And then the last one, I did not write a preview for this one yet, but I plan to. It's one of the longer demos. It's a game called Fishbowl, and I don't know much about it aside from the fact that the visuals are very much reminiscent of something like an Undertale or a 16-bit RPG. And yeah, basically you use this girl who just, like, I guess moved out of her house and is, you know, trying to focus on her career as a video editor. And yeah, there's a whole lot of like wholesome slice of life things in here that I can't really talk about without spoiling anything. But yeah, I've played for about 30 minutes, not done yet. I think this is about a 2-hour demo, so once I go ahead and finish that, I'll report more on it. But this one is definitely along my wheelhouse, and yeah, really enjoying it. And that's about it for me.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news. First up here, we've got March PlayStation Plus Essential lineup with let's see, four games for this month here. First up here, we have for the PS5 PGA Tour 2K25. I think they did this last year. They had the PGA game on here. And so they followed it up with the new one as well. I assume with the new one coming out next year. So that's fun. Let's see. We got for PS5 and PS4 Monster Hunter Rise. As people have decided they don't like Monster Hunter Wilds, Capcom, make sure you have access to Monster Hunter Rise. You can check out one that people tend to like a little bit more as the kind of right mix of challenge and accessibility that people are hoping to get out of Wilds. So there's that. That's a good one. Let's see, also for PS5, Slime Rancher 2, the sequel to the original, kind of a, I don't know about crafting game, but very much kind of like a survival-ish kind of game where you're collecting these slimes, putting them into pens and such to gather the resources that they tend to put out, the gems and whatnot, and using that to build out your base and go to other areas and do all sorts of stuff as you know, find all the ways that they work out. And this new one has more of that. Yeah, you're on this island of these slimes that has a bunch of stuff going on there. So, yeah, that has more, I think, more architecture to it. Like bespoke areas to go to and buildings and such. So, that should be pretty cool. I've not had a chance to check that one out yet. And then, last up for PS5 and PS4, the Elder Scrolls Online Collection Gold Road. I believe this is Elder Scrolls Online with all of the expansions up to Gold Road. I forget which one that is from. Maybe the one that came out last year, or maybe the year before. But fairly recent, so it'll get you a ton of content to play for that game. So if you've been itching for a new Elder Scrolls game, and Elder Scrolls 6 is not going to be coming out, at least for the next few years, it seems like this one can serve as a decent alternative. Though you see, other players running around doing things from time to time. But yeah, it's a pretty good lineup there. I think here you are interested in Brandon.
Monster Hunter Wilds looks neat. I'll probably give that one a shot. Probably PGA as well, but that's an if. Slime Rancher 2 does look neat. I might give that one a shot too. That's about it though.
How about you, Danrup?
No, there is nothing here that has my interest. I've already played Monster Hunter Rise on Switch, and I don't really need to play it again on PlayStation, so.
So yeah, there you go. That'll be out on Tuesday, the 3rd, I believe. So you can check that out. Then we've got some dates for things. For the first one here, Power Wash Simulator 2 has the Adventure Time Pack DLC coming out April 9th. They announced this on the IGN thing that was going on. And I'm excited for this. April 9th for $8 has, much like the first game, they're doing five different jobs set in the world of Adventure Time. Looks like it's gonna look really good for the art style they're adapting for Power Wash Simulator. Everything they're showing here looks really nice. I've watched a little bit of the show, not too much, but I might watch go back and watch some more of it. I'd have some more familiarity with all this, but yeah, looks good. Forward to this. I also have an update coming out in March that will be adding some new stuff they've been working on for a bit, like the ability to remap the controls and do some other stuff that people have been wanting, as well as adding the first of their free jobs that they teased alongside that. Or their Caldera Chronicles jobs. So that'll be fun to see. So yeah, there's that. Let's see, for April 16th, Mouse PI for Hire will be out, as they delayed it from the May 19th launch they were planning originally. So you get about an extra month to wait for that, as they say they want to let's see, as we approach the final stage of development, we want to ensure we are taking the extra time care needed to make Mouse PI for Hire an experience to remember. We remain unwavering in our goal to deliver you the best game we can, and that will take just an extra few weeks. So yeah, I know that's when you're excited for Brandon. Now you have to wait a few more weeks for that.
I mean, I kind of plan ahead for stuff like that.
Yeah.
When it's like it's getting close to us, it's like there's always going to be a 50-50 chance that they're going to have to delay this thing.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I'll just have to wait a few more weeks.
So yeah, there's one to wait a little more time for. Let's see. Also happening in April, He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, Dragon Pearl of Destruction. A very long name there. For a new beat 'em up from Bitmap Bureau. He's made a bunch of other things. I think the Terminator 2D the fake game was them. As well as Final Vendetta, and they've made a number of games in this genre, so this is their new one based on the He-Man stuff. So it seems like that's gonna be pretty neat if you have the nostalgia for that franchise. Yeah, they say 12 stages. You'll have He-Man, Man-at-Arms, Teela, and She-Ra as playable characters. So yeah, co-op support and all that. So yeah, that looks neat. And then the other dates we have is Wolverine, Marvel's Wolverine from Insomniac Games. Finally got a date, September 15th. They basically posted that the you can start wishlisting it, I believe, for that. But yeah, that's exciting. That's probably one of the games I'm most excited for this year. So yeah, that'll be fun to check out. So yeah, any of those things you're looking forward to of the date stuff?
The Wolverine one is definitely one I'm heavily wanting and anticipating. 'Cause those two Spider-Man games that Insomniac did are amazing, and I want to see how they tackle Wolverine.
Yeah. How about you, Daniel?
Yeah, I'd echo him. Wolverine is definitely one of my most anticipated games of the year. Mouse PI for Hire looks nice, but I'm not really interested in playing a first-person shooter right now. And then He-Man's cool too, but I've never been a He-Man guy either.
So there you go for that. We have a couple more games that got announced. Limited Run Games, just in the middle of the week, announced that they were working on a new retro collection of Marvel games called Marvel Maximum Collection that features X-Men, the arcade game, Captain America and the Avengers. That's arcade, Genesis, and NES game, the versions of that. Spider-Man Venom Maximum Carnage for Super Nintendo and Genesis. Spider-Man Venom Separation Anxiety, Super Nintendo and Genesis. Then Spider-Man X-Men Arcades Revenge for Super Nintendo, Genesis, Game Boy, and Game Gear, and the Silver Surfer game for the NES, which is an eclectic collection of games, but I believe all Konami stuff. So this is a partnership with them on that, and boy, these are a bunch of games I'd never played. I don't think I was that into the Marvel stuff to check out this. I think with the licensed games, I was very much like the wary of them at a certain point. I played like the Beavis and Butthead game that was terrible, and the Rocko's Modern Life, and like a bunch of these others. And it's like, yeah, those aren't worth my time. But the arcade game's pretty good from what I've heard, but I just never saw it in arcades.
Yeah, I've actually played like half of these. I definitely played X-Men the arcade game because it was in like a bunch of places when I was growing up, in like various supermarkets and pizza places. So I definitely played that. I also played Captain America and the Avengers on my NES when I was a kid, and I remember really liking it. It was a lot of fun. And Maximum Carnage, yep, definitely played that on my Super Nintendo. More than once. Rest of these, though, never really encountered them.
Yeah, I'm looking up the Jeff Gerstmann NES ranking list to see where Silver Surfer is on it. It is at, where is this at? Oh, it's at number, wait, what was this at? 494. Pretty low on the list of games. So that is I recalled hearing that not very good game. I think it's a shooter, kind of. He just stays on the board and just shoots at people. I don't know, but it's like, sure, that seems like the most throw-in kind of game. Of like, he's kind of a Marvel guy in these guys, wheelhouse. Sure, take it. Especially the only one here that doesn't have another version of the console stuff. So there's a reason why they didn't bring that around very much. But yeah, that's out sometime this year. There's no date on it or really any price or anything for that. So that should be interesting to see how that turns out. Yeah, the arcade game supports six-player online co-op with rollback net code, save states, rewind stuff on each of the games, display options, CRT stuff, music player, digital archive with scans of the original box art stuff. So seems like it'll be similar to like that TMNT collection, which was solid. So that'll be fun. That'll be on everything, it seems like. So I'm sure we'll find out a date for that soon enough. The other game that got announced is the new game from the new Red Octane, which, surprise, surprise, it is a game like the games that the old Red Octane made. called a Stage Tour. Stage Tour, yeah. A very rock band style, but with let's say the like Guitar Hero style like note buttons look on them. Yeah, they don't really have any platforms mentioned other than consoles and probably PC. They just kind of put out a trailer to show this off and all that, and it certainly looks like that sort of game. They'll have a new controller that is a five button controller, same like we have for all this other stuff, so that's kind of neat. We'll see how much of an impact it has, 'cause, yeah, I feel like if you were into this, you got Rock Band 4 and have the library of songs that that has in the game and as DLC for whatever's left of that. So yeah, that's neat. Wish them the best launching new hardware in 2026.
Yeah, that is a gamble.
Yeah, it's definitely taking a big chance just 'cause like we don't really know who it's for, the hardcores. This can just come and go. The casuals probably already have it and are happy with what they have. But honestly, if you ask me, it's just gonna depend on the songs. If the songs are good, great. But that's easier said than done because good songs mean more money and more royalties. Hopefully, it works out. I'm not saying it's dead in the water, but it's tough. Yeah.
But that's it for the positive news for now. We're going to the negative news, although this one's a little bit positive. Discord, which we talked about, they were doing age verification stuff here for March, and they ended up delaying that until the second half of the year because of major criticism, and I think people hacked into the form that this was taking a few weeks ago to figure out it's not very good from what they've rolled out already. So yeah. So when they said most people won't notice any of this, they were right because it got delayed. Nobody has to deal with it at least for probably another 4 or 5 months from what this seems. They put out a statement here saying the way this landed, many of you walked away thinking we're requiring face scans and ID uploads from everyone just to Discord. That's not what's happening, but the fact that so many people believe it tells us we failed at our most basic job, clearly explaining what we're doing and why. That's on us. On top of that, many of you are worried that if this is just another big tech company finding new ways to collect your personal data, that we're creating a problem to justify invasive solutions. I get that skepticism. It's earned, not just towards us, but towards the entire tech industry. But that's not what we're doing. So yeah, still claiming that over 90% of users will never need to verify their age to continue using Discord exactly as they do today. So yeah.
I see a couple of ways that this will turn out. One of them is that they'll just straight up just drop it and say, all right, back to the drawing board. We'll try and come up with something else. The other is that they'll just try and the reason they're specifically rolling it out to later on is so that they can wait until the all of the all of the animus dies down and they just put it on anyway. I'm kind of leaning towards the latter. But like the re one of the reasons among all the others that everybody is so extremely wary of this is because Discord servers do not have the best security in the world, and they've already been hacked once or twice.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go. They're delaying that for a little while longer, so you can keep on using Discord as you have been. We have this other story here that seems like people are able to talk a bit about what Bluepoint had been doing while they were kind of pitching stuff to Sony. One of those things ended up being a Bloodborne remake. A thing that people constantly complained after the shutdown, like, oh, why didn't they do, a bl new Bloodborne thing? Remake or remaster or whatever, and, well, it seems like they did pitch that, and Sony was cool with doing that, but seems like From Software ended up being the ones that convinced them to not do it, which is not really surprising. 'Cause, From Software is a big partner for Sony, and it's certainly something like Bloodborne, which they were a big part of getting that to be such a big deal for them that so much so Hidetaki Miyazaki was talking about, potentially doing this at some point, but very much talk about how he wanted to be involved in that directly. So Blue Point kind of doing for Demon Souls what they did, or for Bloodborne what they did for Demon Souls, was probably not what they would have wanted to do. Maybe more do something directly on their own to, remaster that game or make it better for the current gen. Maybe that ends up happening at some point. Though right now it seems like From Software is very busy with, the Duskbloods and probably doing whatever the next thing is in the Elden Ring vein of games, that kind of stuff. So yeah, it seems like they pitched a bunch of stuff, just nothing ever really got greenlit to actual production here. So that kind of just ended up being the reason why they were shut down. But the obvious thing that people wanted them to do was something that they actually did pitch. So it ended up being not the thing that From Software wanted to, sign off on. So.
So that kind of answers the question, why wouldn't they do that? They'd make a boatloads of money. Because From Software didn't want to get involved. They were already wrapped up in their other stuff.
Yeah, you also got to mind that. Keep in mind that From Software is not like the biggest developer, so it's
No, they're actually they're for the size of their success, they're actually a fairly small team.
yeah. So it's really better for them to do one thing at a time. And then when you think about Bloodborne, like I don't know how well the Demon's Souls remake sold, but obviously, they made some money hand over fist with Elden Ring, that it doesn't really make sense for them to do an exclusive game anymore, although there is the fact that the Duskblood is coming out, so that kind of like removes that theory. But yeah, it sucks, and it's also like it's also unfortunate seeing the discourse online for where people are getting mad at Sony, they're getting mad at Blue Point, and now they're going ahead and getting mad at FromSoft. And I'm like, when it comes to products you guys want, you guys gotta get mad at somebody. Well, it's not really anybody's fault, but all right, it is what it is.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's that. We have more Ubisoft news, as it looks like another big figure of Ubisoft over the last 20 years has decided to leave, and that is Clint Hocking, the guy who's been behind Splinter Cell: Chaos Theory and Far Cry 2, and been mostly the Far Cry guy for much of the last, 10 to 15 years. The guy you've seen on a lot of E3 stages, especially cursing over the cool things they were announcing there. And yeah, it's just been a big one of their most successful directors, I think, for the Far Cry franchise. So definitely a big loss for them to lose that guy in there, the way they're trying to recover from all the shit they've been going through over the last, 5 years or so. So I'm curious to see where he ends up going. Maybe he retires, I don't know, but definitely seems like that is a big loss for Ubisoft. So there you go.
I mean, this is, I'm guessing this is also, just a reflection of, Ubisoft is going through this really messy financial rearrangement and everything, and this is, I guess, one of the growing one of the growing pains of it, I guess, if that makes any sense.
Which is a shame. So yeah, there you go. Seems like he was most recently working on Assassin's Creed Hex.
Yep.
Which I don't remember what the hell that is. I think that was the crossover Assassin's Creed game.
I think so.
Weird. We really haven't talked much about that, so
Yeah.
that's about all we know, really.
Pretty much.
Let's see, for some more news, Full Circle has suffered some layoffs. This is the developer of Skate, the free-to-play game from EA and Full Circle. And they've had an undisclosed number of layoffs. They posted a blog about this, saying it's reshaping to better support Skate's long-term future and focus the team on the things that matter most to players. The team has affected our talented colleagues and friends who helped build the foundation of Skate. Their creativity and dedication are deeply ingrained in what players experience today. The decision is not a reflection of their impact, and we're committed to supporting them through this transition. And so, yeah, it seems like I feel like this is a result of them kind of getting Skate on solid foundation, and at this point, it's largely just content creation of whatever other work they're needing to do for the rest of this early access period into the full launch, and they don't necessarily need everybody that had been working on it, I guess, and kind of trim down a bit. Maybe bring some people in when they need to do more work, but kind of at the point they are in right now, it's just kind of needing a base level of artists and designers and all that to add more stuff to the game. Which is what they're doing at the moment, though they're doing a weird thing where they're adding. So when they announced for the launch and all that, how they were doing monetization and all that, they're basically like, any new additions to the map, we're going to be free. And then the most recent thing they announced is that they are not doing that. I think the most recent battle pass came with early access to the new landmass that they're adding to the game. And then if you don't buy that battle pass, you can access it when it launches for everybody for free for like a month, and then after that you have to pay to access it from then on. And it's like, boy, that sounds rough. And apparently it's a version of the tutorial area that you can just skate fully whenever you want, which is like, that sounds neat, but also very weird thing to try to get people to pay for.
Seriously.
And I'm sure if people don't pay for it, then they'll go back to not charging for it, especially if you're adding that kind of underwhelming kind of content to the game. So this probably adds on to that as seeming like bad news for the game, but seems like the game's doing all right, so I don't know. But yeah, there you go for that bit of news. So yeah, there you go. Let's see. Next up here, we have another game shutting down. This is King of Meat from Amazon and Glowmade. It's a game that seemed like Amazon wanted to be a big deal. So much so that they spent a bunch of money to get to partner with Mr. Beast to make a video promoting the game that did almost nothing for the game. It was very bad kind of way to get people aware of this decently fun game from what I've heard attention. And yeah, it's just not really found an audience, and they say now it's going to be shutting down on April 9th. They've already delisted it from all storefronts, so you can no longer purchase it. Game purchases are disabled, and you can just basically keep playing it for the next month or so. They're also offering a full refund from your platform provider, so if you did buy it, you should be getting a refund sometime before April 9th. But yeah, that seems like another game that just came out and did not find an audience, and they eventually had to pull the plug to prevent wasting more money on it, keeping the servers up and all that. So that's a shame, but Another Amazon failure, which is not a huge surprise. They've just not had any luck finding any long-term success with any of their games.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, we're still going to talk about one more Amazon thing in a little bit, but I remember King of Meat was it had a prominent space at Summer Game Fest Play Days. It was not a game I played because I had other appointments to, really focus on. But again, like it was a huge space, and I remember the year before when they were focusing on New World Eternum, which also, saw a cancellation, and like that was probably the biggest booth on the floor, and they were like serving food and all that stuff. So, Amazon definitely was throwing their money at whatever they can to see if they can make it work. But yeah, it's unfortunate because these didn't work out. I actually enjoyed what I played out of New World, and King of Meat did look interesting. Like I did have like sort of I did get wide-eyed at a medieval Fall Guys, which this pretty much was. But at the same time, it's like, you have to be able to appeal to the masses. And I honestly don't know what was wrong with any of these, but it's just the unfortunate case of what you see here. And unfortunately, Amazon is used to failing, so they're not going to lose much out on this. But at the same time, we have to understand that they're also publishing the Tomb Raider games, which hopefully go well because a lot of stuff is being put into those as well.
And yeah, we have some more Amazon news as they have ended their partnership with Maverick Games. That is a team of former Forza Horizon developers from Playground Games. They kind of left Playground Games and sort of founded their own studio to work on a new big racing game. And sort of seemed to get a pretty good deal with Amazon to publish it and support them on that. But yeah, the unfortunately it seems like that did not go well on Amazon's side. But they are letting them out of the deal so they can go find another publishing partner who may have better means to support them. As it seems like Amazon is just kind of cutting their funding for things for the time being. Outside of like the Tomb Raider stuff they've got worked on that's being worked on, so we'll see. But yeah, this was they picked this up May of 2024 and have been kind of just working on it since then. But yeah, their co-founder and COO Arinder Sanga saying that the game continues to progress as strongly as planned. We're in active dialogue with partners who share a long-term ambition for the IP and look forward to sharing more later this year. So hopefully we do see it later this year with a new publisher, and hopefully not being too far off, but we'll have to see on that front. But yeah, that is some sad news for them, but I feel like somebody will pick that up. But yeah, there you go. And then last up here, we have Nacon filing for insolvency, which is a shame because they seemed like they had a bunch of games lined up to come out this year. That seemed like they were in a decent position, but unfortunately, they announced that its majority shareholder, Big Ben Interactive, was unable to make a 43 million euro loan repayment. This was due to the quote unquote unexpected refusal of its banking pool to respond to the drawdown notice. Big Ben Interactive holds 56.72% of Nacon's share capital and 65.79 of its voting rights. So if they are not paying their loan repayment stuff, then that has a big effect on Nacon's ability to keep going. And yeah, they say their available assets are insufficient to pay its current debts, necessitating action to ensure that it continue operating. And so yeah, they're going to the courts, seeing what legal procedures they need to go through to help reorganize its debt and restabilize the company. So they're looking to get a hearing here in early March, to see where they need to go for this. And yeah, not great when they got a game that just came out in the Styx game, as well as Greedfall 2 is coming out in the near future as well. So, not great for anybody. So yeah, that's a sad news. We'll hope that they can kind of keep going for bits. But yeah, not great for them. So yeah, there you go. Let's see. Let's get to the last part of the show, talking about the Pokemon Presents Showcase, with some of the stuff that they announced there. Because a lot of it was just updates for the various games and such that have been out for a bit. But there's some new stuff here. And first up, the Pokemon game music collection they announced, that is a little Game Boy style jukebox that has 45 songs that come with it. But each of those 45 songs comes on one cartridge each. So you have 45 cartridges to plug into this little thing to play one song. It's like a hit clip style thing that's like, I believe this is $70 for it, so not exactly like a cheap thing for this. So instead of giving you an easy way to access this music to play how you want, they give you this silly way to do it.
Yeah, there's a lot of still a lot of value in plugging in and plugging out every song. For me in particular, I think the packaging for this thing looks awesome. Obviously, I don't have one, but wouldn't mind it. They did sell it at the Nintendo SF store, which sold out pretty quickly, and it's also sold out on the Pokemon Center website, so they got what they wanted.
Let's see. They also announced that Nintendo Switch Online Plus expansion packs GameCube app is getting Pokemon XD Gale of Darkness in March. So we should see that here at some point over the next few weeks. This is the GameCube game that is like the most normal Pokemon-ass game that they've put out on a console until they came back with the Switch. Because I feel like everything else has been like, here's, the N64 games that are just like, here's Pokemon combats in 3D. Here's puzzle games. Here's this and that. There's Pokemon Snap and all this other weird stuff that they've done, but this is sort of the most normal-ass Pokemon game that they've done on consoles until they came back to the Switch.
Yeah, I still did find that a little bit surprising. Yeah, as you mentioned, yeah, it is a normal ass Pokemon game, but I thought it would also be normal to go ahead and release a game like Pokemon Colosseum first, because that one was a GameCube game that's not available anywhere else yet. But yeah, XD Gale of Darkness is a good choice because that's also a $200 physical game that's impossible to find these.
Because I believe that was one of the games they announced for the GameCube app. Looking at the original list they announced, what's left is I think Pokemon Colosseum, Pokemon XD, Gale of Darkness, and Super Mario Sunshine, what they've announced. So that is definitely one of them. They'll probably have Colosseum at some point, maybe April or May. Which should lead into them announcing something around Summer Game Fest time, a new suite of games. But yeah, that's your retro game there. Then they also announced that Pokemon Champions, the strictly like free-to-play combat focused game that is coming to Switch and mobile, will be out on Switch in April and later in the year for mobile platforms. And showed off some of that with some very over the top kind of trailer there for that. But yeah, that seems neat for the people that want to just do regular ass Pokemon combats without having to, go through entire campaigns and all that for it. But that should be neat.
Yeah, when they last talked about this, it seemed like it would be a more exciting thing. This one was a little bit lackluster, but since it's coming out next month, I'll look forward to trying it out.
Yeah, seems like it ties into Pokemon Home. So the Pokemon you've been going through all the hoops to keep them going through each game, you can access through there. And yeah, they're gonna let people connect Legends ZA to Home, so you can bring Pokemon you got there into Home and then Champions. So yeah, that's neat. That'll be something they can do more, esports focused events on just that game. Then they ended on Pokemon Winds and Waves, the new generation here. That will also be only on the Switch 2, so they're not doing a cross-generation thing here. Which definitely kind of came across in the trailer itself, as it does obviously focus a lot on this being sort of a beachside kind of thing, but there's a lot of water, like ocean kind of areas to go through. Seems like different islands you can potentially access between them and all that. So yeah, and the trio they have for the starters seems like a pretty solid bunch here. You got a little like chick, leaf chick, character here called Brout, which gives me Simpsons Bort kind of vibes from that name. The fire one is a Pomeranian named Pombon, which is a great name, a great look. He has kind of a lion's mane kind of look to him, with a little bit of fire to it. Then the water type is a gecko Pokemon called Gekwa, which also has just weird eyelashes on there. So that's a little weird, but otherwise all three look really good. So that's nice to see, and that's out next year. Not even out this year like people were expecting. So there's going to be more time to work on that one. And yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, they made my grass starter an angry bird. I'm not too happy about that, but we'll see. We'll see what the evolutions. I've always chosen grass, for those that don't know.
So yeah, there you go for that. Yeah, that's looking neat, and being on the Switch too should at least mean that we should get a 60 frame per second game this time around. Even if the visuals may not be technically impressive from a lot of freeze frame stuff, but otherwise I feel like this game should at least run pretty well from the way that their Switch 2 stuff has been running.
Yeah, I mean when ZA came out, I haven't heard anybody on the Switch 1 having much issues, so I wouldn't expect this one to be problematic. And if it is, I don't know if I'd call it a surprise, but I'd be genuinely concerned about that. But based on the footage they've shown, I did see a windmill moving at a consistent rate, so we should be okay there.
It actually looks like it looked legit, looks pretty nice, which makes me incredibly suspicious right off the bat.
Especially all the water stuff they're showing.
Yeah.
Because I'm guessing from the way they show it here, it looks like you can probably go underwater. And
Yep.
it's like, that's always a tough thing for consoles to do well.
Yeah.
But yeah, you'll be able to do that. And I assume you'll be scuba diving or something, because otherwise it'd be funny to be able to drown underwater in a Pokemon game.
Yeah.
But yeah. There you go. That looks neat. And now people can obsessively go over this footage and complain about stuff for them, which is what Pokemon fans like to do. So yeah, I think that's gonna end up doing it for this week. We have a new month ahead with some new games that are coming out. I'm trying to see what I had on this list here. Yeah, did Coffee Talk Tokyo get delayed or not? Or is that still March 5th?
I think it did, didn't it? I think it did get delayed.
I know it was March 5th here. May 21st. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah. Let's see. Nevergrave, The Witch and the Curse may also be out this week, and Pokemon Pokopia is out this week, as well as Marathon is out this week. So, yeah, some solid stuff here. For that, might check the wiki for March and see what they have listed here.
Scott Pilgrim EX, I think
Yeah.
think Planet of Lana 2 comes.
Let's see. Yeah, we got World of Warcraft's expansion is out tomorrow. So all those people have something. The Esoteric Ebb game is out. That's the somebody else making a Disco Elysium type of game. But I think more Dungeons and Dragons-esque kind of thing. What they call post-arcane punk fantasy setting. So that could be neat.
Yeah.
Legacy of Kain Defiance Remastered is out this week. Got Pilgrim EX. Back to the Dawn for Switch and Switch 2. Yeah, Marathon, Nevergrave, The Witch and the Curse, Oceanhorn 3 is out on Apple. That's an Apple Arcade exclusive. Planet of Lana 2. Pokemon Pokopia, Poker Night at the Inventory, they're doing a remaster of that. Which is neat, that first game, not the second one. Slay the Spire 2 goes in early access. Timberborn is also out on the 5th. On the 6th, they have Sumerian 6. It's a stealth, real-time tactics game, so there's some neat stuff coming out this week. But yeah, thank you to Brandon Danner for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and things to talk about. If you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know. They should check it out. And select strangers who are also looking forward to a Pokemon game, especially the visuals for the first time in a long time.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.
See y'all.
Bye.